Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we'll look at efforts to combat tuberculosis with an exclusive interview with Dr. Mel Spiegelman, CEO of the TB Alliance. But first, the World Health Organization has announced that COVID-19 no longer constitutes a public health emergency of international concern. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says the decision is based on decreasing numbers of hospitalizations, intensive care unit admissions, and deaths due to the SARS-CoV-2 virus. However, he says the pandemic is not over and thousands of people are still dying from the virus every week.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
WHO says Equatorial Guinea and Tanzania have been responding to separate outbreaks of Marburg virus disease since early February and late March 2023, respectively. In Equatorial Guinea, at least 17 laboratory confirmed cases and 23 probable cases of Marburg have been reported. 12 people lost their lives. The most affected district is Bata in Littoral Province with 11 laboratory confirmed cases. In Tanzania, between mid-March to the end of April, a total of 9 cases included 8 laboratory confirmed cases and 1 probable case have been reported. 6 people have died. All cases have been reported from Bukoba District, Kagera region. Turning now to hepatitis, an inflammation of the liver, often called a silent disease. Many people with hepatitis do not know they are infected or have mild symptoms. Hepatitis can be caused by certain medical conditions, liver damage from alcohol or poison, and most commonly from viruses. There are 5 distinct types of viral hepatitis: A, B, C, D, and E. Hepatitis A and E are spread via contaminated food and water. Hepatitis D is less common and occurs only in association with hepatitis B. The World Health Organization says more than 91 million people in Africa live with hepatitis B or C, which are the deadliest strains of the virus. Uganda accounts for at least 4%. The country has embarked on a concerted drive to wipe out the disease. Fahad Sebogala has this report, narrated by Heidi Adams.
Hepatitis is an inflammation of the liver caused by a variety of infectious viruses and non-infectious agents. It spreads by exposure to infected blood or other bodily fluids, and sufferers risk developing cirrhosis and liver cancer. In Africa, the most prevalent strains of infection are hepatitis B and C, and they affect millions, according to the World Health Organization. The WHO estimates that worldwide, 2 billion people are exposed to hepatitis B infection. Of these, 350 million have chronic infection, with 65 million living in sub-Saharan Africa. Uganda is one of the countries worst hit by the condition, with prevalence of 4.3% for hepatitis B among adults.
Hepatitis B prevalence in Uganda is at about 10%, but that is very variable, ranging from about 4% in southwestern Uganda and about up to 25% in northwestern Uganda. For hepatitis C, the figures are not very well known.
A hepatitis B diagnosis can be a door to stigma and discrimination. Derek Isabayo, a university student battling the infection, found out the hard way after mandatory testing at the university hospital.
It was last last 2 months, when I went to the university hospital for a checkup, so I said, let me go and check for my status. Unfortunately, reaching at the hospital, I found I was positive. I used to hear the signs and symptoms, and 99% of the symptoms, I had them. Most of the people, the public, they have a negative feeling about it. Others, they like your friends, they start distancing themselves from you.
Lutamaguzi Emmanuel, the founding executive director of the Hepatitis Aid Organization, says another constraint for patients is the financial toll hepatitis B takes.
We in Uganda, we still have a very big problem when it comes to treatment or the medication for hepatitis C because it is very expensive.
The difficulty is the medicines available for hepatitis C are very expensive, out of reach for most of the population, and they're even complicated.
Uganda has embarked on a concerted drive to wipe out the disease, relying primarily on vaccination drives for infants and other vulnerable groups. The fight against hepatitis B in Uganda is ongoing, but for health workers and people affected by the disease, it is hoped that increased awareness and education will eventually win out and save lives.
On VOA Africa Radio, we let the sound tell you the story. News, sports, science and entertainment available to you 24/7. Tune in on your local FM stations. We are also available on the medium waves 909 kHz and 1530 kHz. Our short waves are 6080, 15580, 4930, 15165, 15580 and 17530 kilohertz. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
For more on hepatitis, I spoke with Dr. Lorraine Kamunto. She is a medical officer with Hospital, a concierge medical service in Kenya.
Hepatitis is inflammation of the liver. By inflammation, I mean an immune reaction which will cause damage to the liver cells. So this can be caused by a number of things, more commonly by viral infections, which I think is what most people know. But it can also be caused by other things, so like toxins, radiation, some recreational drugs, could be injury. So all of those could cause hepatitis. It's a wide thing, but mostly referred to when about the viral aspect of it.
What form of hepatitis is more common among Africans?
I would say hepatitis B and C are the most common. Although we're looking at it in terms of comparison of the Western world and Africa, you'd find that some forms like hepatitis A and E, which are the fecal oral transmission ones, are not very common in those areas. Though, in general, hepatitis B and C are more common in Nigerians, in Kenyans, in Africans. And hepatitis B is actually more common.
There has been an outbreak of hepatitis E in South Sudan, and they even vaccinated against it. How much of a concern is hepatitis E in general?
So generally, the hepatitis E infection is not usually a harsh one, or rather, I'd say that causes a very virulent cause of infection. Majority of the times, it's a self-limiting disease, which means that it will present with very non-specific, mild, flu-like symptoms and resolve on its own. However, in certain populations, certain vulnerable populations, so we're talking about the pregnant women and the immunocompromised, they tend to get a more severe form of the disease, which can have serious health implications and severe such as liver failure.
What are the symptoms of hepatitis and when should someone be concerned?
So the symptoms of hepatitis generally are very non-specific, so they're flu-like. So you'll have a fever, you'll have a headache, you'll have nausea and vomiting, loss of appetite, you might have abdominal pain. And then in the more advanced stages, when now it has started affecting your liver cells, you get yellowing of your eyes, of your skin. Then in the more advanced stages now, and where now also get worried when they get things like duck urine, they're getting pills.
What treatment is available for hepatitis? And would you share some best practice steps if someone is infected to protect people in the house?
Mainly for hepatitis, we manage it supportively, especially for the milder forms. So we'll just treat the symptoms. So if you have a fever, we give you an antipyretic to manage fever. If you have pain, we give you analgesics to manage that. We give fluids for vomiting and if you're dehydrated, bed rest if needed. But when you have for something like hepatitis C, there's a specific clinical criteria for when to initiate the antiviral medication. So maybe if someone has cirrhosis, which is advanced level of infection, or there's evidence of active identification of the virus, so we give antiviral medication, which are different with the local readers, with lamivudine, there's several options. Okay, best practice in practice steps in avoiding transmission to your infection of the spousal. I will say the actually options of prevention before and so exposure, we have vaccines, hepatitis A, hepatitis B, and now this E vaccine. So it's not very widely distributed. There's no vaccine for hepatitis B, however.
That was Dr. Lorraine Kamunto, medical officer with Hospital, speaking to us from Nairobi, Kenya. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. When you come back, we'll have more on tuberculosis. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1 202-258-3076.
Welcome back to Health Chat. The United Nations is holding meetings on tuberculosis on May 8th and 9th in New York City. The gathering serves as a prelude to the next high-level meeting on TB, which will take place this September during the UN General Assembly. In 2018, nations pledged to invest $2 billion annually by 2022 for TB research and $13 billion annually for TB diagnostics, treatment, and care. But observers say countries got off to a slow start on meeting these pledges, followed by the impact of the pandemic COVID-19. For more on the issue, I spoke to Dr. Mel Spiegelman, CEO of the TB Alliance. Dr. Mel Spiegelman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Data show that tuberculosis deaths have risen for two consecutive years, killing more people than COVID-19, according to reports. First of all, what are your thoughts on the current status of tuberculosis?
Tuberculosis was slowly getting under control, even at too slow a rate. And with the COVID pandemic and with the shift in focus, and we saw very big changes in terms of, you know, what was happening on the ground. TB hospitals were being closed in different countries to take care of COVID patients. The resources were being cut back, both in terms of the healthcare delivery, but also for research development of new products. And so clearly, TB took a relatively big hit during the COVID years, and hopefully now we can begin to turn that around again. The problem fundamentally, I believe, is that TB, even though it's now again the largest single infectious disease killer in the world, is a disease that primarily affects the poor, and not only the poor, but the poorest of the poor. And it becomes, frankly, just very difficult to raise political awareness to garner resources, etc., when there isn't a very strong political voice for helping. And that is a problem when it's almost exclusively poor people who are affected.
Do you say then that most of the challenges we are seeing now with the increase is political in terms of the will and the commitment of politicians?
Oh, I think it has been political for years. This isn't a new phenomenon. It was just a phenomenon that was exacerbated by COVID. But this was a phenomenon going back many, many years, from the time that TB was relatively controlled in high-income countries and became primarily a disease in low-income or middle-income countries, and then also exacerbated by the HIV pandemic, which again, the HIV pandemic was brought under control, relative control, more quickly in the high-income countries because there were a fair number of people, unfortunately, afflicted by HIV in high-income countries. And so there was a push, and fortunately, we have now very good drugs for HIV. But as I think everybody is aware, the rollout of those drugs, the availability in poor countries has taken much longer than the availability in the high-income countries.
Speaking of drugs, one of the things that has been said over the years is the fact that the treatment for tuberculosis can be a bit daunting on patients. What do you think about drug adherence as one of the challenges?
Drug adherence is a major issue, especially in drug-resistant TB. Drug-sensitive TB can now be treated in 4 months, but it's much more usually treated for 6 months of treatment. But at least it's all oral drugs. It's pills. There are no injections in the standard treatment of drug-sensitive TB. But until recently, drug-resistant TB, which has been becoming a greater and greater problem, required treatment with daily injections, and the treatment could take up to 18 months or even longer. And even then, the results were not very good. We were fortunate and made a concerted effort to attack the problem on drug-resistant TB and have now brought that treatment down to 6 months with our new regimen that consists of 3 or 4 only oral drugs. And now we're fortunate to have a situation where we can treat drug-resistant TB in basically the same amount of time, but with different drugs as drug-sensitive TB, and get the same general results of curing probably over 90% of the patients, compared to not that long ago when the treatment success for drug-resistant TB was in the 30% range. So clearly, we've been fortunate enough to make tremendous advances in terms of the science and the drug part, the treatment part for drug-resistant TB, in spite of the lack of adequate resourcing for doing that. But now we have an equal, if not even in a way greater challenge, to get these drugs into the hands of the patients who need them, and to get the countries where TB and drug-resistant TB is a major problem to take up the drugs, to have them available, to make sure patients are diagnosed correctly and to get treated. And it just takes too long to even do that. So, the need is along the whole, what I'll call the value chain. And it starts with the need for much greater resources for research, for development, for innovation on that end. And then the need is also great for the healthcare systems, to strengthen the healthcare system, to ensure universal access to all new treatments, diagnostics, or when we get a new vaccine. That is an equal challenge, and especially in so many of the countries because they're relatively poor. So we still have significant challenges to get TB to a point where the adherence, going back to your original question, where adherence will not be a major problem. Our ultimate goal is to get treatment down to a month, 2 months, or even down to a couple of weeks. When you can do that, obviously, it makes a huge difference on adherence compared to having to remember to take pills every single day for 6 months even. That's difficult for so many of us or so many patients.
What do you say to patients that are running out of patience when it comes to treatment or even finding more innovation to help move the needle in TB control?
We need to have all people, poor, rich, patients, non-patients, really speak out and force the political will to happen. Obviously, patients are the most involved and the most affected because they're the ones who are dying, suffering, etc. But I think we all have to realize that collectively, whereas maybe individuals on an individual level can't make a difference, but collectively we can. And when people who are suffering from TB get together, and this is also another major initiative to really forge civil society's voice, to magnify that and to make that heard, and to make it such that countries and the political leaders can't ignore it anymore.
Coming back to political leaders and their commitment, what should it look like?
Well, you know, I think we just went through an era of COVID where we saw what a pandemic that threatens millions of people should look like. Now, it wasn't 100% successful, but it was fairly successful in the sense that now the COVID pandemic is under relative control. It's not ideal. I fully appreciate that. But with all of the commitments that were made, you know, what we saw in COVID, the power of innovation, the power of putting resources behind a problem and having new vaccines in a year, having new treatments in a year, having point of care diagnostics within a year. All of that is a model. If we could put those resources behind TB, I honestly feel we could eradicate TB. We know it is highly curable with the right treatments, and I believe it is very diagnosable if we put the resources behind it. And I feel very comfortable with the right resources. We can get very, very effective vaccines. And when you put all of that together, this is a disease that could be eradicated. And it certainly, at a minimum, could be made such that it becomes a relatively minor problem on the global stage. But we look at COVID and we see an example of how it can and actually was done.
The UN is holding on May 8th and 9th the meeting on TB in New York City that will serve as a prelude to the next high-level meeting on TB, which is September during the General Assembly. What are your thoughts on what should transpire from this meeting?
We have to be, let me just bluntly say, very aggressive. And we have to court, so to speak, the major countries' political leaders. We have to really show them how big a problem TB is and what a major difference their commitment could make, and then get those commitments in September, between now and September, and then actually have the countries act on them. So there's a huge amount of work that's necessary, you know, obviously, when one is trying to do this, with multiple partners involved. But clearly, this is a problem that is solvable. And we have to convince the political leadership around the world that this is a problem if they dedicate their countries, their voices, their resources to it, that it will make a difference.
Money is one of the backbones of public health. What is your message when it comes to the way funding has progressed?
The funding has just not increased at all. It has been either stable or even dropping. And for a problem of this magnitude, it simply is totally insufficient. And again, I go back to COVID. If TB could get 1% of the resources that were dedicated to COVID, it would be a major advance. That's the degree of lack of attention that we've had in TB. And now we're back again where, fortunately, thank God, that the COVID numbers have gotten so much better, but the TB numbers have even gotten worse to the point that now we have dubious distinction. TB is, again, the leading infectious disease killer in the world, and we simply have no choice. We have to do something about it, and we have to convince the powers that be, so to speak. And I think the last point that I would like to make is it's not, while money is necessary, all the countries involved also can make other commitments, such as speeding up their systems for adoption, speeding up the systems, the regulatory, the other systems for changing their policy. That is also painfully slow. We're another area where we can make a difference in terms of the access. Even after new treatments, new diagnostics, new vaccines are available, we have to work twice as hard to make sure also that they get into the hands of the people who need them as soon as possible. So that's another area that does require significant attention.
Dr. Mel Spiegelman, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you so much for being willing to highlight the problem.
That was Dr. Mel Spiegelman, CEO of the TB Alliance, speaking to us from New York City.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voanews.com and voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Mudu, in Washington, with producer Mukbilia Barrow. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including Russian President Vladimir Putin told a crowd of thousands of people in Moscow's Red Square that the world is at a decisive turning point and that a real war has been unleashed against Russia. Putin spoke while commemorating the defeat of Nazi Germany in World War II, an important holiday for Russians. For this and more, join us for Issues in the News this Saturday.